And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Above in the Bloom, episode 281, your 2025 post-mortem episode. Kind of gets you rocking and rolling as we move towards the 2026 season. But as Lee Corso once said, not so fast, my friends. Let's recap a bit of 2025 before we get to that and much, much more on this show. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing good. Also going to be recapping beer bets, which aka counting how many beers you will owe me at First Pitch Arizona. We will be doing that this evening as well.
This will be a major episode for Ryan, is what this is going to come into.
they're all major. They're all major for me. I'm good. The quad baseball games today were fantastic. It is. I always forget like how refreshing it is for me to watch postseason baseball. Like after sweating the final week, fantasy wise, we drafted a bunch of pennant underdog postseason contests. Not as many as we wanted to. Sold out before we really had a chance. The final night. I know, but it's nice to be able to sit back and just watch baseball and not have too much on the line, and you're sweating every pitch and whatnot. So
you'll be doing that next round.
I was gonna say that might be next week. That might be next week, but whatever.
Yes, it's nice to have baseball, like watching playoff ball right now. Even though the Dodgers had this one pretty much in hand, at least the Reds made it interesting. But it looks like it's gonna be Dodgers pretty easy in game one, as Shohei Ohtani, just absolute freak of nature, as expected.
Yep.
Did his thing amongst many others with the Dodgers. Yankees lost to the Red Sox, Cubs won, and the Tigers held on to win 2-1 as Tarik Skubal is just a man amongst boys on the mound in that game.
Yeah. Struck out about 25 Guardians. Yes, so
pure filth. But before we get to recapping things, Ryan, and before all that good stuff, I'm going to take the banner down because one of our big announcements we hinted at last week, got a new look for the show, folks. New look for 2026 and beyond. So hit the buttons, my friend.
Oh, you want me to hit the buttons? There we go. All right. New, totally new. And obviously if anyone listening on the podcast, this is maybe skip ahead a minute or two, but we've been working on this for a while. Our buddy Aaron, who's a Discord member, Aaron Gifts in the Discord, very talented guy, helped us out with this. So shout out to Aaron. If anyone sees this and is impressed or wants some of their own stuff done, let us know. We will be happy to get you guys in touch. But Aaron's the man. He did not only a new show logo for us that we are unveiling tonight, but basically a whole kind of graphics package of StreamYard and YouTube. We'll put this on Twitter and everything on, and the podcast feed. It's the logo already is already the up there. So, yep. So shout out to Aaron. This is something that we have thought about doing for a while. Our original logo, while it served its purpose, it was basically us just putting something together to have something for a podcast. This almost kind of symbolizes too, like, I don't know. And the reason we're doing it now is like, we pride ourselves on, you know, consistency doing the show. And we want to do this now because we are not stopping. Like, we are doubling down, not only, you know, just on the show, but in putting everything back into the show, and putting it all back towards that. So certainly appreciate, I mean, the reason we're able to do this is because of all the support we've gotten, both just listeners, subscribers, Patreon, that sort of thing. So super appreciate all of that. And that's the timing. If you want to support us even more, again, we're not slowing down. We're going to do this all off season long. We are not focusing on that other sport, taking breaks, et cetera, et cetera. At the very least, if you can like, subscribe to the YouTube channel, we're going to keep building that up a little bit more. That's going to be an off season goal of ours. And of course, if you want to be involved in the Patreon community in our Discord, patreon.com/BubbaBloom. So I've blabbered on for too long, but super excited about this.
It is. Like you said, we've been working on this for a while. We always try to add to what we do for this show each and every year. Like, it was like, okay, we're doing two shows a week. Okay, now we're doing the Patreon. We said the Patreon, we're going to put most of it, like, we're going to put it back and make it better. This is a big put it back into what's going on. We Scott Burks in the chat says, you have new stickers coming to FPAS. We have stickers coming. We have other stuff coming, too, to FPAS with the logos on it. Like, this was a big deal for us. We were pretty pumped on this because there's the logo that you'll see on your podcast feeds. But if you're watching on YouTube, it's at the center of the screen, the two of us kind of in a cartoon form but then it's also like in the bottom left corner. That's a watermark and our word mark. And like, we have all kinds of different things for potential merchandise and all kinds of other deals. That it was a really cool overall process that, again, Aaron kicked butt in making it work. The guy's a wizard. We like leave him notes. We talk, Ryan and I would talk before our shows, like, hey, what do we need to change? This and that. We kind of give him a list of things and he'd wake up to it. And then less than 24 hours later, knock like, here's a bunch of stuff. So very, very grateful to have that kind of a connection to make this work. And hopefully the listeners, viewers, and everybody enjoy it, because there'll be more to come, not just the YouTube, the Patreon, which has more to come. The off-season plans, as Ryan mentioned, we're not stopping. It's still two shows a week. We'll probably still have some other stuff. We have ideas for some really, I don't know if cool is the right word, but like kind of draft helping Patreon-only shows we kind of discussed along the way. I don't want to completely unveil another project we have in mind that's going to be starting up sooner than later. Pretty cool off-season project. I want to get that ironed out before we get that all to the masses, but that should be ironed out here in the next couple weeks, actually, because I need to get started on that. So there will be a lot more coming your ways. We want to make this bigger and better and awesome and a great community, plus just a great place to enjoy baseball and fantasy baseball. So, and actually learn from it and help you be successful in your fantasy baseball game along the way. So thank you to everybody, as Ryan said, that has supported us along the way and keep supporting us. We'd appreciate it, because we'll keep the good times rolling on Bubba and the Bloom. That's the plan, at least.
So. Well said. I'll just do my last inappropriate joke, but we're hoping not to Cracker Barrel this thing with the new logo. So we're going to, we're forging ahead and not looking back, people. If you don't like our caricatures, that's okay.
You should have seen the first one. That's all I'm gonna say. And this happened when we did our last logo too. Like, always. The first one's like, whoa, okay, let's edit. Let's do a few things here. But yeah, we got it pretty dialed in now, which is pretty cool to see, and we're pretty pumped on it. So I hope you guys like it half as much as we do. And that'll be a start in the right direction. All right. With all that being said, we'll keep you guys updated on things to come this offseason, because like I said, if everything works out well, it's gonna be a pretty sweet offseason while everyone's playing football and kind of enjoying their quote unquote break. Not over here, not up in here, as they say. All right, let's go to listener leagues. This is something that we started 2 years ago. Like I said, we add things, Ryan. We started it 2 years ago, had a couple leagues. This year, they're $50, 15 team NFBC auctions. For those that are new to this, you have to be a listener. And obviously that's the only way you find out about this. We don't tweet out how to join the league. You got to be in the list. It's that simple. This year we managed to get 10 leagues, 150 teams. To us, that was like, whoa, like really cool to see. So I'll give you the floor with this, Ryan, if you want to unveil how things ended up, because you had your weekly column to update the Patreon members.
Right. And we saw this whole listener league through, like, every Monday I would write a quick article, just the top 15 overall, top 15 the past week, and kind of give everyone a shout out. It was a very good project. And like you said, we had 10 leagues, which is without even promoting it outside of the show, up from 4 the previous season. Hope to grow it even more. And yes, we will do listener leagues again in 2026. We will, kind of as usual, we will take sign up starting in January. So again, we won't post it, but we will talk about it a ton on the actual show. But did want to shout out our listener league winners. The overall winner was Jason Weir, who I did not realize this. I knew it was the entire second half he had the lead. Jason Weir held the overall lead out of 150 teams for all but 1 week of the season, and that was the first week. Like, that is mind-boggling to me, especially early in the year. So Jason Weir took down the overall. He not only just by, you know, fame and fortune of winning the Bubba in the Bloom second annual overall, Jason gets a free registration to a future First Pitch Arizona from our friends at Baseball HQ, and shout to Baseball HQ for sponsoring the leagues. That was the overall prize for the winner. So really hope to see Jason out there, out at First Pitch 1 year. Couldn't make it this year, but we are keeping that invite open to him for future years. I want to shout out the other 9 league winners just real quick. Mark Jordan, very active on the Discord. Lucas Beery seems to win everything that he touches. Matthew Hennings, Michael Cicchini, who's in the chat right now. Shout out Michael. Ben Tidd finished third overall. hell of a year for Ben Tidd. I know 12th in the main. You guys just recapped his main event team on Bench with Bubba earlier today. Ben Tidd won a listener league and finished third overall. Brandon Waddell, another super, super talented player who mostly I think plays 12 teamers. Yes. And these listener leagues were 15 team auctions. So a little bit of a different format for Brandon, and it didn't really matter. So he took it down. Bobby King, Max Crow, and our good buddy Ben Bingham, who finished second overall. Those were our league winners. All of those folks will get free subscriptions, 1 year subscription to Baseball HQ, in addition to monetary winnings from the NFBC. So congratulations to all the listener league winners. Notice I did not list Bubba or myself, but that's okay. We don't need the free subscriptions or the glory. We would rather pass it on to our fine listeners.
Yeah, it was really, really awesome in that regard. The overall was, like you mentioned, Weir, Bingham got second, Ben Tidd got third, Lucas, who you mentioned as an overall winner, he got fourth overall, Michael Cicchini fifth, Mark Jordan sixth, Aaron, the wonderful human being that helped us with this project,
yep,
finished seventh in the overall, but second to Ben Tidd in that league. So that says how good he still played. Brandon Waddell eighth, Matthew Hennings ninth, and Tony Musso 10th. So a lot of great finishes there. Really good stuff. I guess for old time's sakes, Ryan, where did you finish in the overall so you can tell me how much you beat me by?
I want to say around 40th. I'll pull it up real quick. I don't have it up. But
that's a heck of a run from the way things started, I'll tell you that. You're 52nd. You finished 52nd. I got it right here.
Must have had a late season collapse like many of my other squads, but I'll take that. I'll take that from where I started.
52nd is really good. Roger Bloomfield finished 82nd. That was one guy we were keeping an eye on at all time. Martin Sokolsky's 80th, and he was battling from the bottom for a while, so that's impressive. Your write-ups mentioned how he finished really strong. I finished 98th. Yes, 98th. Not last.
Double digits. Great. Out of 150, but, hey, man, that's like, you know, that's not horrible. Obviously, you want better, but
the way the season started, that one was a grind. I finished ninth in the league, and it looked like there was no chance of finishing better than like 13th for a long time there. So we grind on that one. So not my best showing, but yes, you moved up to 52nd, and Papa Bloom beat me as well. So I'll have to probably buy him a beer as well. See where that goes. Anything else on the listener leagues? Again, big accomplishment. Hope to make it even bigger and better this upcoming season.
Agreed. We'll run it back. Tune back in January, and obviously shows in between then. But that's when we will announce the listener leagues and how to sign up. So we will definitely run it back bigger and better in 26.
All right. Then this gets into the post-mortem / maybe victory laps. Depends on how things went around here. We'll kind of give the rundown accountability of what took place in our formats and go over a couple of our teams, kind of what we thought overall. So I'll give Ryan the floor. Ryan had a really, really good year this year. So the floor is yours, Bloom. Where would you like to go with this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to. You know me, I'm very self-deprecating, so this is uncomfortable for me. But had a really good year. It's actually funny. I had I was in five draft and holds, and that was my strongest thing. It was first, 3 seconds, and then a fourth place in draft and holds. So I definitely want to go back and look at those. I have not done that kind of a deep dive on those five draft and holds, but I want to see what I did right there and kind of keep that formula going. One labor mixed, which I'm super proud of. That was an almost 20 point win for the second time in 3 years. So that was really cool. We will dive a little bit deeper into the labor team. There's just a couple characteristics from that team. Again, not to talk about my team, but use it as a kind of a talking point for how you all can do postmortems. That's kind of one of the purposes of this show. So yeah, really, really great year. I tied with the guilds in for second place in the Beat the Bloom, aka Tofu Bats, for my meatless offense online championship. So I ended up tying the guilds like in the last hour of play on Sunday. Small potatoes for that guy who just had a season for the ages, winning all four of his main events. I'm sure was not even tracking the Beat the Bloom league, but but tied for second in that, so that was cool to at least get something back from there. So definitely had some duds. I was in last place in our Vegas listener league for pretty much the entire season until the last week, and I crawled way up to 11th out of 12. So we'll talk about that squad as well. So definitely some misses, but I think overall, and I've had, trust me, I've had plenty of bad years. This one feels pretty good. So yeah, that's how it ended up for me.
Yeah, for me, it was a very frustrating year. Monetarily, not great. Cashed in two leagues. One league. I lost. That's right. I got knocked out of the OLEC on the last day. So that was good. My DC sucked. That's where I cashed. I had one third place DC team that was second for a while. Got into third. Most of those finished poorly. My NFBC 50 to like a third and a fifth. So that summarizes where I'm going with my fab. My main fab leagues, I finished, I think, sixth in tout or something. Sixth or seventh, wherever, like right behind you. But
yep, same. Yep.
My fab leagues, this is where it's frustrating. One of my OCs, I finished sixth. My beat Bubba OC, we'll talk about later, finished fourth. Drafted that in February. Standalone league finished fifth. Vegas league finished fourth. Lister league ninth, and then the OLAC fourth. So just on the cusp of doing anything worth a damn in all of those leagues. And that's where it makes it so frustrating. So I told Ryan also, and I mentioned in the Discord, is I need a little breather. And then I'm going to take some deep dives. So I was actually texting with Ryan today because we were talking about some stuff he's going to pull off the NFBC site. And I want to take some deep dives on some of these to see the good, the bad, the ugly, and what can change in that regard. Because that's how on bad seasons, I think that's where you learn more. Well, potentially, maybe not, but that's just me. So it was a frustrating season. I wouldn't say it's bad. It wasn't like they were all like 10th place teams or something, but it was very frustrating. No, it's probably like two or three fab moves or something where everything changes. And that's where I already knew, like midway through the season, I got telling Ryan and some others I need to be better at fab and be more aggressive in fab. And that I have a feeling when I dig in more, that's going to be one of the major glaring takeaways.
And that might be, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's kind of a springboard. And like, again, I don't really love talking about our own teams because really no one cares. But like, I think a lot of listeners are probably in the same boat saying I need to improve in fab. And it's just interesting. Like, you can go back and look at, and I recommend you do. I'm actually going to do a tutorial for the Patreon to, I'm going to pull up the NFBC page and see exactly how to pull all this data. And so you can kind of do your own postmortems if you follow along. I think it's important not to just say, oh, I need to get better in fab leagues. It's to kind of drill down, and you're going to do this once you get there, drill down. And is it a, you know, did I just pick the wrong players? Was the process okay? Did I spend triple digits on way too many guys and that didn't work? Like, do I need to do something with my, it's going to sound morbid, with my life, with my like process? Like, do I need to carve out 2 hours on a Friday night or something and start fab or, you know, that sort of thing. Those are all on the table when you're kind of doing these postmortems. And I recommend doing it now, because in a few months, you're going to forget once projections come out and stuff like that. All eyes are going to be on 2026 and you're going to want to draft. This is the time to do that now. And it's just important how you do it, because it's key not to overreact to something. Like, you can have good years, you can have bad years, you can be good in fab 1 year or even lead the league. So just kind of look for kind of process wise or just how you spent your money, those types of kind of larger scale issues, as opposed to, did I pick Nick Kurtz or Jack Caglione? Like, obviously that has a very big difference, but I don't know, is there much of a lesson to learn exactly for that? Maybe there is, but that I'm just kind of throwing that example out there. As what to do and maybe what not to do when you're going back looking at your teams.
I just know, like, going back, and obviously Kurtz is the easy one to look at, but there's so many guys that are at least helped out, especially in 12s. Like, why was I not more aggressive at all on most? Like, I've always been the guy that is very timid with my my fab, and that needs to change, it feels like, as I do more soul searching on this one, is what it comes down to. So we're going to dig into a couple teams here. And I'll give Ryan the floor first. You wanted to check out your labor team that you ran away with, which is pretty awesome stuff indeed. So what do you have for this labor squad you wanted to discuss?
All right, I'll pull it up here and I'll flip our scene. That looks pretty good. No, it doesn't. There we go. All right. Yeah, that looks better again. So a couple things on labor. And again, I'm not going to go pick my pick by pick through my teams or whatever. This one's interesting to me in terms of, I always harp on, I say this every year, we do entire episodes on ADP pockets. I always harp on the importance of the middle rounds in drafts, and Labor to me this year is the quintessential example of that. So it may be hard to see my team, but I started with Lindor, Freeman, Teoscar, whatever. My two first pitchers were Devin Williams and Michael King. And I did not take another pitcher until Sonny Gray in the eighth round. And you kind of think on that and you're like, that's not a good start. But if I scroll down a little bit more, these middle rounds, so the eighth, well, Sonny Gray wasn't that great this year. The skills were good, but it was a ninth round, Randy Arozarena. It was a 10th round, Matt Chapman, 11th round, Rodon, 12th round, Christopher Sanchez, 13th round, Kyle Finnegan. There's a Nate Eovaldi in the 16th round. There's a Trevor Story in the 21st round. There's a Matthew Boyd in the 22nd round. I'm not just doing this to pat myself on the back. It's if you hit and you nail these middle rounds, it can so much more than make up for, even in this case, losing your top closer basically doing nothing and your top starting pitcher not doing much at all either. So to me, this is like even more so my offseason prep is going to be focusing and trying to nail those middle rounds, because I think that's the spot in the draft where, like, yes, early kind of everyone's good. You can poke holes, whatever. Late, a lot of those guys aren't going to work out. They're all flyers. You're probably going to cut a bunch of them. Those middle rounds are kind of the guys you're stuck with, but they're also good enough to be able to post those kind of true breakouts like a Christopher Sanchez, like a Randy Arozarena did. So that was by far my biggest takeaway for Labor is it's middle rounds, man. It's what it's all about. I'm telling you.
It is. It definitely is. That's one of the big conversations that we had earlier on Bench with Bubba. So we mentioned you for the middle round guru. And it is, it's very, very important because, like you said, most of us know the, you know, top 100 players. How do you navigate the top 100 players? You do need to run pure, or try to run as close to pure as possible when it comes to injuries, but that's just the reality of the game. But those middle rounds, like if you can hit on a third to half of them, you're going to be sitting real pretty, if not more. Like you said, Randy almost got you 30-30. Rodon gets you all the strikeouts. Matt Chapman was good. Sanchez, obviously. You just go down the list. Like Victor Robles didn't do anything. Didn't matter. Kyber Ruiz hurt forever. So like, it's not like they were all gold, but like you still got a lot of like Eovaldi beasts. Conforto's not even on the postseason roster. So it's just, yeah, the ones you hit on were huge and it helped in a big, big way.
Yeah. And I think I'd rather have hit on two, you know, a 10th and 11th round guys and have my fourth rounder not do much. Like it sounds weird, but at least in this case, like that's basically what happened. So another interesting thing here, I was tweeting, I was talking with Jenny Butler about this. I remember this from the draft in Labor. She sniped me with the mascot who just got engaged, by the way. Congratulations. Yes.
Congratulations to the mascot, Mr. Luis Rengifo, and future Mrs. Luis Rengifo.
Yep. Mrs. Mascot coming up. Jenny Butler sniped me in the 12th round on Luis Rengifo, the pick before me. And my pivot, I remember really wanting Rengifo. The pivot was Christopher Sanchez. And so it's just interesting, like, and I know this is a kind of just a nugget to tuck away for draft season. Like sometimes getting sniped isn't the worst thing in the world. If she did not pick Rengifo, I take Rengifo and I don't have Christopher Sanchez and things could look a lot different. So, and that's really more just luck than anything else. So just figured I'd throw that one out there.
That's part of it. The way the draft works, you can have your plan in play, but it's pivoting and hopefully hammering that pivot, if that makes sense.
Yep.
To what you're hoping for. And hey, sometimes what you hope for, it wasn't the right play either. So just kind of a lot has to go your way to have a dominating season. It always sounds bad saying that. It doesn't take anything away from the way you drafted or the way you fabbed or anything. It's just in a 27-week season, a lot has to work in your favor to stay dominant.
And a lot can go wrong, and you can still – so and then we'll move on. But, like, so the other big piece to this Labor team, I spent $34 of my fab out of 100 on Jack Caglione. Like – So I screwed up. Like I wasted a third of my fab on Caglione, and my first two pitchers were Michael King and Devin Williams. Like you can still, and I still ran away with the league by, and it's a very active league. I've been in it for a while. I've been in high stakes leagues as well. It's an active league. So it's not a labor thing. It is fantasy baseball. Like you need to have depth, middle round, hit on those lates, because you're going to screw up. You're going to, you know, you're going to make mistakes. It's what else do you do around it?
Yep, for sure. Also goes to show you that you can be aggressive on certain players, win or lose. And there's going to be a lot of $1 players throughout the season.
Yep.
So that's another reason, like me and my fab conversation, like maybe be aggressive. You can still piece it together later on. Like it's doable. See where it goes from there. All right. My turn, I guess. I'm going to take this down and then I'm going to add my screen. Let's look at my OLAC team, the one that I finished oh so close to making money. I was as high as second for a while. It's been second and fourth forever. But what I want to show you here is it's not like, you know, this is actually a pretty bad auction if you look at the finished product. But what I guess it's more so what I need to work on improving, like, and lessons learned in the 15s, especially. So like catchers, Wilson Contreras, Tyler Contreras was awesome. There's no doubt about that. But Stevenson was hurt. He was pretty useless. Vinny P was great. Stott was fine. Tovar, whatever. Chapman, Shaw was garbage. He was gone. Swanson was great at that price. Like Soler, nothing. Dominguez was worthless most of the time. Doyle figured it out eventually. Randy was awesome for $10. That was great. Taylor Ward was great. Nimmo was pretty good. So hitting wise, whatever. A lot of things needed to change there. The reason, like my pitching dominated my team. I think I had over 60, or for a long time, I had over 60 pitching points. It might have been a little lower that by season's end. And that's where I did really well here. And that's my takeaway from this is in 15 team leagues. Like I know we're going to recap one of my 12s coming up, and it's the one where everybody's like, what are you doing waiting until the ninth round to take a pitcher? Well, in 12s, you can get away with that crap. In a 15, this solidified me more than ever that I need to be focused on pitching, because even with Dylan Cease as my ace and Kodai Senga stinking, getting like
Tanner Bibee,
but Iglesias, Finnegan, but Rodon was huge. That was a big target of mine all preseason. Eovaldi for $4, Lodolo. But then where I really wanted to go with this is, as I pull up another screen, we're going to really multitask here, Ryan.
I mean, you kind of did, while you pull that up, you kind of did the middle round thing as well. It's just an auction form. You took the Rosarena, who I took in labor. Your $3, $4, $5 pitchers were Olson, Eovaldi, and I already forget the $5 guy, but
I had Rodon for 10.
You had Rodon for 10. So it's kind of a similar type theme, just in an auction.
But what also helped is in the late rounds, we talk about the snake part as like you can focus on. Some people like to take chances, but that's where I got Chris Bassett, who was great for like the first half of the season. Like that, for not spending a dollar, awesome. Lucas Giolito turned out to be great. Zach Lytle had his moments, and that is what it is. But also the Caleb Durbin pick is the one I was looking at. That kind of helped me a lot in my other holes, if that made sense. So I was fabbing hitting a lot, which again, I went into going, okay, I can find hitting in 15s, more so in 12s. But this is more of a lessons learned part for me, because I kept fabbing hitting, and that's what got me back into monetary contention. Didn't quite get there in the end, but I guess if I spread my will, because I could have not gotten Cease and got another pitcher lower, and I only got Senga because he went for $11. Yeah, I didn't expect him to go that cheap, so it's kind of a catch 22,
which could be a lesson learned in itself.
Yes, you
weren't that big on Senga either.
Exactly,
he was cheap.
But I think it comes down to I need to be more focused on those good floor hitters to go with my, I guess, I don't know, it's not an aggressive pitching approach, but it was a high strikeout, good floor pitching approach is kind of where I was leaning in that department.
Yep.
But it's like the hitters like Matt Shaw, like, you know me, like, what am I doing there? Ezekiel Tovar, what are we doing there? Jorge Soler, I think that was the last minute. Like, what I needed power. I remember that for a fact. But there's a lot of things in that regard that I need to focus on my hitting approach. How can I improve my hitting while still banking enough cash for the pitchers I like? And it's only my second year doing auctions, so I'm actually pretty happy with the way it all ended. And I usually don't do well in 15s. And the fact that I was hanging around in there made me kind of happy in the end. It was just frustrating to lose out on the cash in the end. But I guess I always wanted to show that you can build a pretty crappy team. Like on paper, if I looked at that I'm looking at that roster right now, I'm going, how did that finish in the chance to catch? Is the truth of it. And I'm not going to pull up my roster now. That'll be something I'll do later to kind of look at how I fabbed things along the way. But I guess it's a good point that you can build your team and still make, I guess, the right moves to make it work. But that pitching floor is important in a 15, and that's what I took away from this.
I think that's a very good takeaway, and it's not just player-centric. Like, why did I take Cease instead of this guy? Like, I don't know if that's the right post-mortem you want to do. And exactly. I think that 12 first 15 is a good takeaway and learning experience for you, for sure.
It's just 15s aren't my style. So, yes.
Speaking of not my style, I mean, that'll segue into, and you were in this league with me. We're going to talk about the Vegas Listener League, which, all right. So mistake number one on this post-mortem, extremely hungover for this draft. So maybe that's learning, you know, lesson one is to be somewhat with it, but this was Sunday morning in Vegas. It's going to happen. We drafted right next to each other. This might have been my other problem. This will be a joke, but we were drafting right next to each other at the wheel, 11 and 12. And I was just trying to piss you off and take your guys. And I think that's why I finished in, you know.
Yeah. As you've seen how the rest of my leagues went, that's what your problem was.
This was a disaster, and I have not done many 12-team fab leagues at all, and that's going to be probably my takeaway for this is, yeah, like, so I took Michael Harris in the third, Albies in the fifth, not great, Ober in the seventh, not great, Jake Berger in the 10th, Ohapi 11th, like, missed a lot. Jordan Romano was my second closer. So, like, yeah, you're going to have hits and misses, but I think in a 12, correct me if I'm wrong, you can live with the misses. You just need to make up for it in fab. And I'm not going to go through, you know, all my fab moves for the show. We want to keep some listeners around for this thing, but I went through and looked at my fab ads and it just did not, that's why I finished 11th, 12th is I just did not. And I don't know if that's like, there were like almost no good fab ads. And I didn't really spend more than like $40 on a single player in this league. I had a lot of kind of bites at the apple. And it just didn't work. And that's something I need to think about. I had other leagues where I did great. The Listener League, and we mentioned how kind of I crawled back. That's a 15-teamer. I mean, I fabbed like Cade Horton, Quinn Priester. Like I had good fab results in that league. So that's what I need. And I'm listeners out there too. You know, if I did bad in fab in one league and good in a different league, is there something wrong with my process or did just something go wrong with the players that I picked in that league? In my case, the third thing I need to figure out, is it a 12 team versus 15 team thing? Because I just did not hit fab well at all in the Vegas Listener League. And it obviously showed. I scored like 33 points.
Yeah, that will have partly to do with it. That's like the fab thing I've mentioned. And you were even more timid because you went with the 15 team mindset on yours.
Yes.
Which definitely had something to do with it. And then it's like, you don't do mini 12. So it's like Vladdy's a great pick, but do you want that floor pick there? Or do you want to take a gamble at something else? I guess is what it comes down to, which I don't hate Vladdy there, but that's just one example. And it doesn't help that like Ozzie Albies, Michael Harris, like
Chris Sale. So I actually, this is also interesting. I keep hearing, oh, 12, you need to be aggressive. You know, you can cut, get him back. I picked Chris Sale as my ace. Did nothing, got hurt. I cut him and I couldn't get him back. Like that was just an extra kick in the.
Well, and a lot of leagues you can. I'll say this much that we said it all year. This was the most aggressive league I've ever seen.
This thing was intense, man.
Dude, there was more fab moves in this league every single week, all the way to the end, than any other 12 I've ever played in. Like, I'm not even just exaggerating there. I would recap my fab every week with Ben. And this league always had like twice as many moves as my other 12s.
Fun-ass league that we're going to run back next year. Shout out to Scott Slezak, who finished
himself a year.
Had himself a year. Finished second in the main event overall. But more importantly, also won the Vegas Listener
League. The first annual.
the first annual. And no one will ever take that away from Scott. Yeah. So congrats.
And he came back because that was one of those our buddy Wanick was winning for quite a while. Yeah. Waddell was up there for a bit. Yeah. And Slezak was like the three of them fighting it out. I finished fourth because I'm just hanging out like 10 points behind those three, just duking it out up top. There was no chance to even get him close to getting in there. So, yeah, it
there he is.
Crazy.
Scott's in there, so it's a great honor. Michael Cicchini says, I've historically played 12s, adjusted my 15-team approach, and did better there, but crossed my wires and was too safe in 12. The balance is tricky, in my opinion. Agreed, especially when you're playing both formats at the same time, trying to flip your brain literally from league to league every Sunday. So, good point.
Yep, it changes quite a bit. And I'm not going to go back to my OLAC, but now I know why it finished so well. Look at the team that finished the season compared to now. I fabbed really well there, and I wonder if it's because I use my 12-team mindset. And it worked. I don't know, but I have a ton of players that make sense to why that team turned out much better than it was when all things were said and done in that OLAC. All right, for my last one, I want to bring up my Beat Bubba OC, which was, I believe, the first one.
First done. One. That was the week before mine.
In February. So this one was interesting. We live streamed it, and I was the 11th pick, and I left this draft pretty pumped. Started with J-Rod, obviously. I finished fourth.
Oh, this was season. Your Freddie Peralta wait till the ninth round that I was giving you shit about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I remember this.
No, this is where it's like, okay, people say drafting early is crazy, but if you look at some of these price tags, not getting these later on. And this is another reason why 12s, maybe why I didn't cash, but also why 12s, you can still compete. Like J-Rod's great, Lindor's great. That 1-2 punch out the gate, no problem. O'Neal Cruz, I cut by the end of the season. We talked about that multiple times. He's my third pick. Devin Williams, yeah, we know how that went. So there's two picks gone. Altuve was good. Teoscar, it was same with Suzuki. There's my round eight Caminero. That turned out to be pretty good to go with Lindor and J-Rod. But then it's like it's a starting pitch. You run a Peralta, Brown, and Rodon. Those three right there, like,
dude, that's huge.
Outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding for that part of the draft. And that's doesn't work all the time. Three aces
in rounds 9, 10, 11.
And that would never happen mid to late March, ever. So, and will it ever happen again? Probably not. But you can get away with some of those type of games, is what I'm trying to say with these early drafts. And just if I would have fabbed this league better, I know I could. It should have been so much better. Because like Zach Gallen, we know I dropped him. Wells, but then there's Flaherty. Romano stunk. Like a lot of these picks aren't great. But there's that three-headed monster of starting pitchers to go with the three-headed monster of J-Rod, Lindor, and Caminero. Jansen's story, Lizardo, like if I use Fab properly, this team's a lot better. Looking at these 30 rounds, 2/3 of them should be off my team. Like it's a bad draft, all things considered. But it goes to show you if you hit on, and especially in a 12 or in a 15, that thing had no chance ever had in a 15, but in a 12, literally over half those picks are garbage by the end of the season. Maybe not the whole season. They might have helped a little bit, but you know what I'm trying to say there. You could mix and match a lot there and make some magic happen. So
how long did you hold on to Bubba Chandler? I see you took Bubba Chandler in the 22nd round of this one.
Probably too long. Well, I know.
that's for Bubba Chandler. 1 week was too long for him.
Yeah, I know. I kept most of my 12s. I think I kept them until the All-Star break. My 15s that I had them, I kept them. I only had them like in 115.
And I'm sure you dropped. This is frustrating part, but also something to figure out for postmortem. Like you drafted your next pick was an awesome pick was Andrew Vaughn, but I'm sure you did not have Andrew Vaughn on your team when he was good. Andrew Vaughn,
he was gone. That's for sure. There's Max Muncy from the Dodgers. He wasn't around. You can just go down the list of pitchers here. Not good, Bob. Is the way literally from rounds 22 on Morel, Chandler, Vaughn, Jock, Muncy, Cortez, Holmes, Wallner, Cutter Crawford, Cody Bradford, all gone.
That's perhaps one of your main takeaways is do you need to maybe you probably look at another draft or two or whatever, but how did your end game starting pitching go in those leagues? Is that something you need to kind of focus more draft prep on?
I think I need to go.
The middle rounds, but the end game.
I think I need to just focus in general more so on why did that happen. I don't know why the screen went dark, but we'll cut that off. What I need to focus more on most likely is because they weren't even like gamble picks in the end is the weird part, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I guess it's more that's the early drafting part of things is how that came out to play, or maybe go a little bit of a 15 team approach and only take a couple chances late. I don't know. That's an end game thing. Cause obviously if any of those picks hit, that helps me out. But also if I fab better, that helps me out also. So it's kind of a catch 22 there, but it just goes to show you in a 12 having three aces. I didn't even have a good closer. I had Romano and Williams and that got pieced together.
Yeah.
And then the three hitters in J-Rod, Caminero and Lindor, gets me floating to build around that. But to take the jump, I probably needed to draft better, yes.
Yeah. But, I hear you.
Yeah.
I mean, we can always draft better, but it's I think, again, I just think, like, just look across for you all doing your own teams. If you have enough teams, if you're like us, and that's not a problem. You don't want to overreact to one league and who you picked, but are there any general themes, areas of the draft, positions, rookie versus veteran? And then obviously fab, like not only again, which players did you add, but how was your fab spend, you know, throughout the season? How, you know, did you go for a couple guys? Did you not? Would you want to change any of that for next year? So those types of things I think are the good things to try and take away when you're going back and looking.
Yeah. I'd be terrified to go back and listen to our player shares podcast. I know Devin, Devin Williams and Seiya Suzuki, I think are my two of my top like three or four rostered players.
Yeah.
So that tells you right out the gate, things are in trouble. And
mine was probably Randy Rosarena, I think was my most rostered. And like, I know that people don't like to hear this a lot of times, but a lot of the time it's, did you just pick the right players?
Yep.
It's like, I mean, I know that's overly simplistic and maybe you're diving in too deep looking for trends and that sort of thing, but it's like some teams you pick the right players, some teams you don't. Similar ADP, you don't have a strong conviction over one or the other, it can drastically change your season.
No, I agree. It's a conversation Ben and I had because he mentioned how he diversified to make sure, like, on all of his mains, he had, like, that's how he landed on Crochet and the main he did well in because he had Wheeler and someone else in the first two drafts.
He just wanted to pick someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, that's how, like, it basically was a FOMO draft, is what it, when we reviewed it. And he's debating, should he become more, because his other teams are horribly fit compared to this one. So he's like, should I be more, just go all in like the guilds who you look at him and he's got his dudes and he just pounds that.
Yeah.
Or do you go a different route? I said, hey, if one out of every three wins a top 15 in the overall, I'd probably stick with what's working. But that's just my brain.
And one thing on the guild, if no one has any idea who the guilds is, like you're not tuned into the NFBC, but I mentioned him earlier. He had this awesome season, won all four of his main events. He was the Kyron Paris guy. Three in the top 15. He was the Kyron Paris guy. Yeah. And I remember he had a tweet saying, I'm not throwing shade here. I'm just that you can make mistakes and still do very well. I think he added Kyron Paris on like all of his teams in the second.
For a lot of fab. For a lot of money.
Great players make mistakes. So don't nitpick every single mistake. Look for those kind of broader process type things that you want to change, in my opinion.
Yep. And that's kind of another takeaway from this is there's a million ways to draft, a million ways to run your team, lots of ways to make it happen. But in the end, you have to do a lot of the right things. You still got to run pretty good. Like you got to avoid the big injuries. You got to, and even so, like one of the hardest things for me, and I don't even know if there's a proper answer to it, because we're basically playing a game trying to predict the future. Even just like setting lineups on Mondays, like when you're debating between two guys. How many times does that go wrong when you're like, man, if I just switch this like three different times, like it's like stupid little things like that.
Well, and like, and not even, and that, yeah, like I'm glad you bring that up actually. So what's my, you know, can I schedule a rogue meeting at 4 o'clock on Mondays and block out an hour and try and nail that in? What am I looking at to make lineup decisions? Am I looking at, you know, the weekly planner, the weekly hitter projections that I've got? Are you looking at something else? Like, do you want to mix that up? There's just those types of things. I think those are valid to think about, as opposed to, you know, I certainly wouldn't recommend anyone. Oh, back on April 21st, I started this guy over that guy. Like, yeah, I mean, sure. I think that's a little much, and I can't even remember, but that's another thing about just your process. What tools are you using? Did that work? Did it not? That sort of thing.
Yep, exactly. Lots of ways to do it. And here at Bubba and the Bloom, we're going to do our best to help you along those ways, at least give you the right advice. Maybe not, right. We might not do it ourselves. Do as I say, not as I do. But we'll try to help you in that regard and send you in the right direction. And I'll plug Bench with Bubba. I got plans this offseason to break down and talk to some guys that do a lot of different things in the drafting game. So
I mean, and we'll get to beer bets, but like I guess a plug for the weekly planner and the tools that I have in the Patreon. That's what I use. that's what I use, and I had a very successful season using the tools that I have put out for people. So again, don't want to be too salesy or whatever, but that it's truly stuff that I believe in and actually use for my teams.
Yep. I use the planner all the time. The pitching thing we had all season, that helped me a ton to string pitchers. Like there's a lot to that, luck to it. And the hitting thing towards the end of the season was a nice add as well. So yes. Yes, indeed. All right. Let's get to it.
Line them up.
Let me know.
Line them up. Quite literally.
How many drinks am I buying yet? Dobson Ranch this year.
Line them up. All right. So beer bets for any newer listeners to the show. We didn't do that many in-season beer bets, so it's been a little while. But basically,
Ryan was scared. He wanted to keep his lead. He didn't want to try to.
I wanted to play defense. Wanted to play defense there. Four corners it on you. But basically, beer bets are our way when we get into arguments on preseason shows and that sort of thing. Not arguments, but disagreements on players, which we often do. We'll propose a beer bet. And I write them all down. I've got a Google Doc here. And at the end of the season, we revisit this. And every win is a beer or high noon at first pitch Arizona. So we had a bunch this season. Let's run back through and tally up who won. I don't think I'd run away. We'll see. First beer bet was on our shortstop preview episode. My Mookie Betts versus your Francisco Lindor. Side-by-side ADPs at the position in the late first round. But think you got that one on me.
I'll put a tally on the Bubba side on that one as Lindor.
Keeping score there on your
– Yep, keeping score on my
legal pad. All right.
Yep. Another 30-30 season for Lindor. So, yeah, we can move on with that one. Seems pretty self-explanatory.
Excellent season for Lindor. In my defense, was made before Mookie Betts had some kind of crazy illness and lost 20 pounds, but I probably would have lost anyway. Lindor,
you would have made
Lindor
that bet anyways. You're always a Mookie Betts guy.
He's an old. I like him. All right, my turn. This is by far my favorite one. Your Mason Wynn, who I was on a complete island. Everyone loved Mason Wynn. I'm going to steal 40 bases before the season. Mason Wynn, 3% barrel rate. Mason Wynn. All right, I'll stop against my Bo Bichette.
You win. You win. We'll leave it there. You win. Mason Wynn's having surgery. Like, we don't have to talk about this. Don't beat the man. He's already down. He's dead already.
Hey, and I actually like Mason Wynn a lot now, especially after the season. Good on him. But
I'm still in for next year. But yes.
Time for my embarrassment is your. This is kind of a. I might not even. This may be withdrawal. Let's see what you think. You're Spencer Schwellenbach against my Aaron Nola. How many innings did Schwellenbach even pitch?
I'm gonna look it up right now because did we make a rule on that?
I think it's pretty clear.
He had 110 innings.
Okay. That counts. That's more than 17 I thought. Starts. No, that counts. That counts.
Yeah. Schwelly got you good on that one.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking, drinking, whatever on that one. But yeah, Aaron Nola versus Schwellenbach. You got me.
Yep. Got you good on that one.
Next one, I'm going to have to actually pull up the player rater. So far, I probably should have said this. These are. Yeah, as Joe says, NA. I think anyone would have beat Aaron Nola. You could have picked Air. And
yes.
I mean, Aaron Nola was a net negative to teams. Yandy Diaz, my Yandy Diaz against your Andrew Vaughn.
That got a lot closer, I think we thought, by the end of that season.
I thought I had crushed you because Andrew Vaughn was in the minors.
Pretty sure you still got me, though.
I still think I have you, but let's...
Fangraphs player rater for anybody curious.
Yeah, Fangraphs player rater. Yeah, has Yandy Diaz the number 9 first baseman.
Yeah, you got
hit 300 with 20. Jesus, 300 with 25 home runs. I did not know it was that good of a season for
Andrew Vaughn's 41st.
for Yandy Diaz. And yeah, Andrew Vaughn's off the page. All right, I'll take it.
Yep.
What are we at? 2-2?
2-2. Yandy's one of those guys where I think I need to start just getting my bias out of the way and accepting who he is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we have time for deeper dives, but I feel like he kind of ran pure, but we'll see.
He did. Ballpark does not hurt.
Yeah. Oh, God. Actually, this is close. Michael Harris, my Michael Harris, of course, versus Wyatt Langford.
This is really close.
Presumably
Langford did go 2020, though. Langford did go 2020. Neither one of them are on the first. Oh, that's the second page.
20 oblique injuries and 20 homers, or 20 homers, 20 steals for Langford?
You can stop with that now. What do we have here? Oh, man, this is getting rough. Okay.
They're not that far down, are they?
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing? All right, so Harris is outfielder 35 on the player radar.
Then you might have won.
And Langford is outfielder 37.
How did that happen? How?
Wow.
Unbelievable. I call
it. Dude, they're 30 cents off. Let's go to Razzball.
Yeah.
That's a tie. Let's see if that's. I'm not doing 30 cents difference.
That's a tie. That's crazy. That's probably the last weekend where he hit like 3 home runs for you. Michael Harris, when you said thanks for helping me, he helped you.
Well, he helped teams against me. Wow. On the Razzball player rater, Michael Harris is 130 overall. Wyatt Langford is 131. I think we can shake hands on that one.
Yeah, we're good. We're going to call that one null and void.
Damn it. I thought I had that one.
Yeah, it would be a heck of a comeback. Because when we did these, like, at the All-Star break, you had no chance on that one.
All right. So next is... Oh.
You got your Robbie Ray one? I'm waiting for this one.
You're Garrett one Mitchell.
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll give Ryan...
Do I even need to say?
No, but Ryan gets that one. Okay, check.
For what it's worth, it was against Jesus Sanchez. So, but yeah, Garrett Mitchell.
Talk about a lost season.
Not great. I also actually... Well, a little beside thing. I need to... So we did it for the Patreon. I did a survey of all these beer bets, and all of our Patreon members submitted their answers. I need to go back and see if anyone... went whatever 10 for 10. Something else on the to-do list. All right, so next up is Wyatt Langford for you. I must have really not liked Wyatt Langford, because why is he in?
I really liked him.
Versus my Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, should be me.
Yes, I don't think Jackson Merrill.
So we're back to 3-3 now.
You're good.
Yep.
Yeah, we're 3-3. Oh, another one of my favorites. Innings pitch total between.
Yeah, I was waiting for the Robbie Ray one.
Okay. My Robbie Ray versus your Nestor Cortez. Yep.
4-3, Ryan. 4-3, Ryan. Did Nestor even qualify, as you mentioned with Schwellenbach earlier? Did Nestor qualify for this one?
Did he come back? He came back.
Oh, yeah. I think our deal was they just had to, like, pitch during the season. We made that.
Well,
34 innings.
We did. So, but this was a. This was a pure innings pitch total.
Yeah, no. So like, I was joking. Yeah,
zero counts.
You win.
Man. All right. So in season, starting on May 1st, my JT Realmuto versus your goose, Gustin Ramirez.
I think I'm going to win this one.
I think so. I don't know how we calculate since
What was the date?
May 1st.
Okay, pull up JTR stats from May 1st, and we'll compare stats. I'll get Goose's from May 1st. Goose hit 227, which is not great, but he had 18 home runs, 15 stolen bases, 67 runs, and 62 RBIs.
How'd you pull that up so quick?
Game logs, Fangraphs, May 1st.
Damn. I go to the splits tool. Change that process, post-mortem.
Yes, I do this for almost all my player stuff.
All right. JTR hit 262, 10 homers, 4 steals.
Yeah, I think I win.
Why? What were homers and steals?
18 home runs, 15 steals.
Yeah.
How many runs in RBIs?
I'll give it to you. Yeah. Runs and RBI was for JTR 48 and 44.
Yeah, 67 runs, 62 RBIs.
All right, we got good. That one. Yeah. the 40 points of batting average for JTR is not so much. Not enough.
No, not going to cut it. He needed to hit 342.
Yeah. All right. So this isn't good. We have a random ass beer bet of a two-step on the week of May 5th.
Oh, you won that one by a scotch. I remember this. I remember we did this.
Of Chicago it. White. This is must have been a terrible episode. Of Chicago White Sox two-steps.
Yeah, Burks versus Smith, right? Which one did I have, Burke?
Yeah, I picked Shane Smith and you picked Sean Burke.
Watch, pull Burke. What was the week? Do you have the dates?
Week of May 5th. Cinco de Mayo. Okay,
so do yours.
Go to the game. I won by a lot, dude.
Oh, I know. But I want to compare the numbers just for fun. Because I had 10 and a third innings, two earned runs, 8 walks, and 4 strikeouts.
All right. Game log, and you type in the dates?
5-5 to 5-11. You could do the game there.
5-11? So you have your
two starts.
I don't know, man. Do you, like, click on the dates?
I'll get it. I'll get it for you. Just give me a second here.
Slow. All right. Yeah, I had 11 innings, 12 strikeouts.
Yeah.
2 earned runs.
Yeah, I had 10 and a third, 2 earned runs, 8 walks, 4 Ks. So, yeah, you got me in the strikeout department. And that was enough to win. Got so, you're up.
All departments on that one.
Yeah, you did. All right, next bet.
Last one. We have 2 canceled bets, which we'll bring up. Starting June 1st, my Will Smith versus your Yiner Diaz at catcher. Lesson learned. Do not debate.
What was the date on this one again?
June 1st.
June 1st, Fangraphs just got really slow all of a sudden.
We looked at it before the show.
Won. Yeah, I won that one. So that's the final bet.
It's the final bet.
Do you want to know the tally?
What do we got?
10 total bets. It's 5-5.
Oh.
I thought you were going to mop the floor.
Disappointing. I thought so too. What the hell?
When we did the kind of update mid-season, you were like smoking me. What were the 2 canceled bets?
2 canceled bets were, innings pitched. I don't know why we canceled this. Innings pitched, my Evaldi versus your Brandon Woodruff. Oh.
I think it's because
Woodruff makes it to opening day. That was our thing. So, I mean, I kind of won that, but that's okay.
No, you kind of didn't. The rules weren't. I was kidding.
kind of did. The last one was George Kirby. This was canceled. I don't know why. I guess Kirby started the year hurt. George Kirby versus Dylan Cease. My Kirby versus your Cease.
Yeah, it's because he didn't start the year, but if you have the player ratings up, I'm curious.
Oh, Kirby crushed him, I think. Dylan Cease is 217 on the Razzball player rater, and George Kirby is 184.
Like Kirby had a struggling second half after that injury.
Kirby had a struggling first half, too. At least first few starts off.
It's more moral of the story there. Both of them were not good.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby was a little better, but it was canceled bet. I'm fine.
5-5. 5-5. I don't think it's just said and done.
All right. Scott, awesome. Scott Slezak says you both get a beer. I guess we both get 5 at first pitch, which shouldn't
be a problem. shouldn't be a problem. That'll happen pretty easily. I don't know what we're going to do the next 3 nights, but that'll happen pretty easily.
Like at Dobson Ranch.
Yeah. This won't even be at the hotel bar. This will be off site. This will be when we order the buckets for the cart at the first tee.
With, what's her name? We'll move on.
All right. Listener questions. Unless you have any more postmortem to discuss.
No, we can, damn, I'm disappointed. I thought I had you.
I was looking forward to seeing you just destroy me on this one, but apparently not. All right. Got some listener questions, and I'm going to preface this. Some of these questions need a lot more research. This is way too soon, postmortem, to give these answers. So I'm just going to preface that right out the gate here. Ben Bingham says, are there any guys who burned you this year that you'll be back in on next year?
So I would say, I mean, I'll answer the first part to that. The second part, I'm just not sure. But I mean, need to look at ADP, that sort of thing. The guys who burned me this year, I would say Michael Harris and Bailey Ober. And I don't know what the lessons, like, especially with Ober, I don't know, like, how could I have thought that he would be pitching with a hip injury? and velocity would be down a couple ticks. Like, I'm not saying that's the only reason Ober was this bad, but certainly was one of my, like, any league where you took Bailey Ober, those ratios were just brutal because you were starting Bailey Ober for way too long. Like, it wasn't just an injury type deal. So I'll say Bailey Ober and Michael Harris, who did turn things around at the end. So maybe that wasn't the worst pick in the world.
Like, first thoughts, just thinking of guys I've rostered plenty. Seiya Suzuki, I'd definitely be back in on. He was a down season, but I like Seiya quite a bit. But just kind of in context to one of our beer bets we just mentioned, we talked about it on a recent Bloom Board. I will be fully back in on Dylan Cease, who I was very heavy on this year.
Okay. Like,
we talked about it. Agreed. You were interested even on him. Like, it's just his profile. He's going to have roller coasters, but the skills have been maybe even better this year. I think we talked about them in the past. So Dylan Cease is a guy I was very heavy on this year, and I have zero problems going back down that well next year. So that'd be one from there. Steve Brun says Bybee's most likely if he's not a big discount this year. So he's talking about a guy he'd probably be back in on. Almost just took him in the meatball draft. Keegan says kind of the opposite of Ben's question. Any guys that helped you out this year, but you're saying thanks and I'm probably out next season due to the price or another reason?
So it's interesting. This is one draft that I've seen, but Randy Rosarena went in the third round of an early draft and hold on the NFBC this past week. Like I said, a ton of Randy Rosarena this season. If he's a third rounder next year, I don't know about that. The other ones, maybe a more of an obvious call, so I don't know if I'll be in or not next year because the market is smart, but George Springer had a lot of George Springer. He was a very big reason for my success, and I don't think he repeats that. But again, the market obviously isn't going to expect a repeat, so it all just depends what the ADP is there.
One guy that I need to look a lot more at because I know he's going to still cost quite a bit, so I don't know if I'm going to be fully out on him, but I'm just very concerned on things, is Wyatt Langford. I don't know if I can continue to go down this path of the injuries we continue to see with the soft tissue oblique situation. Like, is he the next Troy Tulowitzki type thing? That scares me. Yep. So I might have to, like, he went, I think, third or fourth round in these drafts, and that's tough. That's tough to jump back in on that.
Really good one from Joe in the chat. Byron Buxton, who I think, yes, if you had Buxton this year, thank your lucky stars. Maybe that's not the right word, but, like, maybe it was a good pick, not luck. But I don't know. Probably it was luck that he stayed healthy the whole season, and I think the price is going to be. We talked about Buxton a show or two ago, and I'm nowhere near what I think he'll go for next year.
Mailman Mike, this will come up in a later show, but he says, any players that had a horrible year on your radar next year? If so, who? I got to do a lot of digging for that one, just to be totally honest.
Yep, agreed. No, great question. I have not dug in for next year at this point, so we'll get there.
BP says, name a guy or two that didn't have elite numbers because of missing some time, so maybe they are a bit undervalued and could be huge next year. I'm thinking Jackson Churio. Yeah, he's just not undervalued is the problem. People are still paying what they should for Jackson Churio, but I agree to his injury question. Anybody that might stand out to you?
I will say I'll go back to George Kirby, just because we just talked about him. But, like, George Kirby's missed time was at the beginning of the season, and the ERA, the ratios are pretty bad because he returned, and I don't think he was ready. I remember watching these starts. He just got lit up for 2 or 3 starts, and I think that kind of torpedoed him. I think George Kirby's still going to be really good. He finished the season healthy. That's huge for me, so I'll say George Kirby.
I don't know if I'm interested in this, but what about Yordan Alvarez as he keeps falling late second round now?
Late second? Probably not.
That's a discount for him, technically, but yeah.
Oh, it's a huge discount. I mean, perennial first rounder, but
that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I could. I think he went in the fourth round in our meatball draft, and that I could do, but sounds like that won't be the case going forward for Yordan.
All right. I could have answered this question 2 years ago, but this is you now, Ryan, since you're the DC master. I'm continually getting obliterated in DCs. This is Martin Sikulski, by the way. Give me your best piece of drafting advice or lessons learned from 2025 in your DCs.
So for me, the big two things that worked for me this year, again, I'm going to shout the draft, Martin, you probably use it, the draft tracker. It gives exact, like, and we did, this is all based on kind of research that we did over the offseason, it gives kind of allocates your bench positions. DC is all about building depth, in my opinion. Like, you need to be able to build depth smartly. So make sure you have 3+ or whatever at every position. But the draft tracking tool that I built, like, actually forces you to put guys in those slots and kind of stick to those positional targets. The other thing is just in terms of it's all about balance. So if you wait in a DC to take your third baseman, it should be inverse when you build your bench. So you're the first bench guy you probably want to take is a really good third baseman and back him up that way. Just an example, but that's the biggest thing. Every team in DC is going to have injuries. You need to run pure in DCs to do really well in them and avoid injuries. I don't know how you do that when you draft in January or whatever for these, but those would be the two biggest things in terms of in draft and holds for me, building depth and kind of inverse building your hitters that way.
I agree with everything you said about the depth, the inverse. That's really important. I think the inverse gets overlooked in a lot of these. I think that's clutch. The injury thing that destroyed me this season. So I don't know how you avoid that, but that is a major factor as well.
And just to like build depth, that's an easy thing to say, but like focus on, if you want to be really good in DCs, rounds like 20 to 40, almost the middle rounds of draft and holds. Like your 40 to 50 round guys, maybe you hit a couple, but like that's tough. But if you can get a bunch of good depth pieces that you were going to use in rounds 20 to 40, that's where I typically did most of my prep for DCs last season, was focusing on that group.
And the key word, depth with pieces you'll use. Because yep. That's a very big part. Like, limit your shot taking is what I would say as well. Joe says, for me this year in DCs, I'm going high quality saves and depth and starting pitching. That is a decent recipe to go off.
Sounds good in theory. Yep.
Market 8 says in the Discord, seems like a lot of questions at outfielders who were disappointed this year, like Langford, Wood, Merrill, PCA, second half collapse. There's some interesting ranks like Buxton and Roman Anthony. That is correct. Good points on all of that. Ben Bingham says, did position depth turn out the way you expected? For example, if you were aggressive at second base at the top because the pool dried up later.
Yeah, we'll certainly have a very good recaps, answer on that once we get through our positional recaps, which we'll probably start. I don't know when we started them last year, but I'm assuming we'll probably start them pretty soon, where we will go back through. So I don't really know for now. I do remember drafting the meatball. That second base was still very terrible. Yes. I don't know, but they're also good second baseman late. So TBD on that one, Ben, once we get to our positional recaps.
A few weeks away. Smokey Joe says, obviously haven't done any numbers, but it felt like batting average only has fewer top guys and batting average guys. Arise, Kwan, Altuve, Jung-Hoo Lee, to an extent, didn't pan out. Are we thinking more about batting average next year, especially in the early rounds? Yes and no. Like, I try not to base all my stuff on batting average, but you can't ignore it, I guess, is the best way I can say it.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, even from the get-go, I don't like those true elite, like the Arise, Kwan, even like Jacob Wilson, I won't be in on next year. I'm more focusing on like the 260, 270 projected batting average guys that actually do other things. But I think I saw Trey Turner won the NL batting crown with the lowest batting average in I don't know how many years, but would need to do a little bit of a deeper dive on batting average as a whole, but seems to be going down again.
Moose says, any trends in roster construction between your auction teams and your snake draft teams? To be determined on that one, but I kind of tried to explain with my auction versus redraft, at least in one format.
Yeah. No, I only did one auction, so I don't really know on that one. So I hope to do more than one auction.
Oh, Martin Sikulski, you're the best. He says, this one's for Bubba, 66. And this is in all caps now, spelled out, 66. That's how many stolen bases the Giants had in 2025. With stop sign Bob leaving SF, how much more should we expect them to run? I do know that personnel is a factor, but still, I expect them to run a lot more. I have a feeling Posey wants to institute that. I would be shocked if they're not at least closer to what they used to be with Kapler in town. Smokey Joe said, oh, he's talking someone else. And then Ross says, when evaluating lessons learned, how do you avoid small sample bias? i.e. focus on reliable process-based decision-making improvements versus making next year's strategic decisions based on what happened to a few of your key players this season. That is a very key point to this whole process.
Yeah, Ross, I thought gave a very good answer to his own question, if that makes sense. I don't think you want to focus on a few key players and use your takeaways that way. I think you want to look at more the process-based decision-making process that you use. You can look at positions and rookie versus veteran, stuff like that. I've kind of all already said this, but I think it's a great question. Something, an easy pitfall when you're doing postmortems. I'm not going to draft Dylan Cease next year. That's not a takeaway you should take from doing this.
Exactly. And it's why I tried to explain probably the wrong way with the wrong words or whatnot with even the auction. It's like, or even at the Beat Bubba OC, I'm like, yeah, this team was horrible, but the fact I hit on these parts you can build with, if that makes sense. So it's not like, obviously it shows me also to do different things in drafts at the same time. So it's not a tear it all down situation, but you can look at the good, the bads, and the ugly and try to see where to improve, I guess, is the best way to go about that. There's always ways to improve unless you're just the beast that does it every single year, which no one's that. There's really good ones that do a lot of it every year, don't get me wrong, but no one wins like the overall every single season. And if you did that every year, then you could probably sit back and go, I figured it out. But no one's done that. Keegan in the chat says, I won my first DC I'd ever done this year. Between rounds 20 to 40, I hit on Buxton, Clay Holmes, Hoffman, Kirk, Soderstrom, Edward Cabrera, Augustin Ramirez, and Quinn Priester. Kind of chalked it up to that. Is a phenomenal set of mid-round. That goes to Ryan's point of usable mid-round pieces. That is phenomenal right there.
Yeah, that's like that theory on steroids. That's well done, Keegan. That's awesome. Congratulations on the win, for sure.
Yes, congratulations indeed. And with that, Ryan, postmortem in the books. Final thoughts before we got the Bubba and the Bloomies, second annual on Thursday night.
Great. Quick final thought is, this is a famous quote from, I'm going to say Frank Beamer, but it probably existed before. Frank Beamer always said, Virginia Tech head coach, so I'm biased here. He always said, it's never as good as it seems, and it's never as bad as it seems. I think that's like, if you had a great season like I did this year, don't get too high on your horse and, you know, think you're the greatest player in the world or whatever. There's just as good a chance that I'm going to have a bad season next year. Flip side with you, Bubba. You've had great seasons before. It just didn't break your way in a lot of leagues this season, but it's never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems. If you had a bad year this year, don't let that get you down. Don't overreact to it too much. Just kind of stick to your process and prove where you can, but don't react too much to how good or bad of a year you had this season, because it can all change again in 2026.
So very true. And that's why I'm more frustrated than mad, I guess, is the way it comes down to, because I know it's close. I know most people don't care about that. Most people don't care. They just want to hear it as a monetary number, but it's a grind and they're not always going to be great. So it's just the way it is. But we'll be in Arizona. We'll be in Vegas. We'll be drafting in between, and we'll have a lot more coming your way on the Patreon and on the podcast and all the good stuff there. So we'll sign off with that. Bubba and the Bloomies on Thursday. Make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick. Until next time, Bubba in the Bloom, episode 281. Catch y'all later.